Sorry, nobody down here except the horror podcasting community's most unwanted.
Agent Matt, Agent Steve, I'm Agent Jody. I've been assigned to do a weekly podcast with you.
Do you believe in the possibility of transatlantic podcast?
That would be completely illogical. Given the time difference, the dedication required would exceed a human being's capabilities.
Unless, of course, the podcast involved a TV show about extreme possibilities, a melding of horror, sci-fi, and mystery.
When Dead Lantern offers us no weekly podcast, might we not finally turn to an X-Files podcast as a possibility?
A culmination of review, analysis, and intellectual discussion on a science fiction television phenomenon by international participants. Could such a thing exist?
The Explodey Files, a weekly X-Files podcast brought to you by DeadLantern.com. I want to believe that it won't suck.
The long-awaited episode of the Zombie Girls podcast. After a not-so-brief hiatus, we're back. And with me for this, I guess, return to podcasting is my co-host, Miss Ariel.
Hi.
Coming from us from the sunny seaside town in the UK is Cody Joe.
Hello.
I'm not rusty at all. and also joining us is the possibly clean-shaven Sarah.
Clean-shaven?
Your dome piece.
What?
Your dome piece. The picture of you that I'm looking at on Skype, you're all shaved.
Oh, no, I've got hair again now, but I need a haircut. It's awful.
Yeah.
It's in that in-between stage.
Right on. Do you have, like, the puffy sides?
I had been keeping it maintained, but I've been busy.
I'd like to see you rock like a full on like Morrissey pompadour. Can you make that happen?
That would be kind of
not at the length now, but
we'll grow.
I was sporting a pompadour for a little while, and I look damn good.
Yeah, I think you could totally pull off. You should make that happen. Hair talk with the girls. All right. So, ladies, it's been a while. Let's do, like, I mean, we've already caught up a little bit, but I wanted to know, what have you been watching? Ariel. Oh, not Ariel. Anyone but Ariel.
Okay, I'll go ahead.
Man, I just got some serious greasy eyeball.
All right, I'm just going to run down the list and then just talk about, like, a couple of things. Still Screaming. Scream the Inside Story. The original Scream. Todd and the Book of Pure Evil, a movie called Supernatural Activity, Iron Sky, Sand Shark, Jersey Shore Shark Attack, and Two-Headed Shark Attack, Shrooms, Graveyard Shift, Tales from the Dark Side, Wolfpacker Reseda, The Fog, Anaconda, Paranorman, Hotel Transylvania, the original Frankenweenie, Night of Living Dead Reanimation.
All right.
So you kind of
hate yourself and... You've been kinder to yourself lately, is what I'm getting from this.
A couple things I want to talk about are Still Screaming and Scream the Inside Story are available in their entirety on YouTube. Check them out if you like the franchises. Rewatching Scream, it still holds up.
That's good.
Enjoy the hell out of Todd and the Book of Pure Evil.
Yes.
Supernatural Activity is a pretty funny little spoof that combines like The Last Exorcism, Paranormal Activity, and like douchey magicians.
So, you can't go wrong with douchey magicians.
So, you know, I say it's worth a check out. I really liked Iron Sky, but it's definitely not for everybody. It should have been a Terry Gilliam film.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It should have been.
That's the one with like President Palin, right? Which was
a
horror category for me.
Yeah. Shrooms. All right, but I guess the ending like 10 minutes into it. There's Graveyard Shift. Tales from the Dark Side, it holds up for what it is. It's definitely more of a kind of, I would definitely use it as more like an introduction to horror rather than, you know, an actual horror film. Wolfpack of Reseda, I don't know much about it, but it was a lot of fun to watch. You know, the original Fog is what I watched. Great film. I'd never seen it before. That was cool.
Really? Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah. Anaconda. I know it gets a lot of hate, but I discovered it was like somebody took a one of those like African exploitation films from like the 30s and 40s, like one of the Amazon ones, and then just put a modern day cast in it and didn't update the script. So that's why I got John Voight chewing up scenery and, you know, everybody just acting so.
That is such a guilty pleasure. I love that movie. Whenever it's on, I'm like, yes!
I know. I even watched the second J-Lo one recently.
J-Lo and Ice Cube, what?
Let's see. Paranorman, great film.
Yes.
Hotel Transylvania, a lot of fun. The original Frankenweenie, love it. Night of the Living Dead Reanimation, actually pretty decent. It's a hell of a lot better than 3D.
I had not heard good things about that, so that's interesting.
You know, there's not it's very story driven between it's this, you know, the story between the two brothers with Andrew Devoff playing Sid Haig's character Gerald Tolliver Jr. from Night of the Living Dead 3D.
But
that's good. There's just for some reason they decided to put a Sarah Palin-esque character in there, and there's not a whole lot of zombie action, but it's decent.
Okay.
Let's see. As far as the shark films,
oh my god,
they're CGI shark films. It's just tell you. I mean, Two-Headed Shark Attack. This is a shark that's like this big prehistoric shark that can flip a yacht and yet can somehow sneak up on somebody in waist deep water. and Brooke Hogan's the survivor girl. That should tell you something.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I've seen the sharktopus, and I've seen the giant shark versus
big shark versus giant octopus.
Yes. But I have not seen the two-headed shark. How does it stack up to those cinematic classics?
The two-headed shark doesn't look embarrassed to be there like it did in Mega Shark versus it. Like, you look at that CGI shark and it looks embarrassed to be there.
It's pretty sad when the CGI shark has more sense than Debbie Gibson and Tiffany combined.
But Jersey Shore Shark Attack's kind of funny because the guy that they have playing like the situation character, they call him the complication.
The what?
The complication.
The complication.
He looks a lot like Jimmy Fallon, and the guy looks like he's like 45.
So like the situation.
But when he talks, the way he spits out his words is very Tracy Morgan.
Weird.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's a weird little mix.
So would you recommend Jersey Shore Attack?
Have a few beers, invite a few friends over, and watch it. I'd recommend it out of the three of them.
All right. Good times.
And that's what I've been watching.
All right. Good times. How about you, Miss Jody?
Yeah, a couple things. Not as many as Sarah.
Sarah kept busy.
Yeah.
You'd think it'd have been like 8 months or something.
I've got some old things and some new things. Old films I've seen. An old Audrey Hepburn film called Wait Until Dark. That was really good. It had like a kind of a slasher feel at the end.
I love that movie.
Isn't it great? It took a while to get going. It was kind of slow at first, and I was like, I don't really know where it's going. But the last act,
yeah,
so good. And that's a high recommendation. Also, Onibaba, I caught up with, which I loved. That's the two women who are looting from dead samurais, and there's the demon mask thing. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really cool. Definitely check that one out too. I caught up with the Gates of Hell trilogy, which is the City of the Living Dead, the Beyond, and House by the Cemetery. Really, really good. I heard that The Beyond was the best one, but I thought City was the best. But that might be because in The Beyond you've got the guy having his face eaten off by tarantulas, which I wasn't really down with.
Oh, no.
And it's awful because they've got like one real one and a dozen fake ones. So they look really, really fake. They're just like bouncing along on a piece of string, but they're still horrible. Yeah. If you check out that scene on YouTube or something, it's blah. Yeah. So those are all recommends. New things. I don't know if you remember on our, I think it must have been our 2011 wrap-up show, you mentioned a film, Rachel, called The Divide with Michael Biehn.
Yes.
I caught up with that. It's good. Really, really fucking dark. Really bleak. It's kind of like this post-apocalyptic movie. Fairly low budget, I guess. It's a bunch of people just trapped in a basement of an apartment building and just how they descend into, you know, chaos and things. Really, really dark and bleak, but really, really good. Sort of a recommend, I suppose. But, yeah. What else? A few things that the horror all-nighter Halloween thing that I went to, caught up with Excision, which we may or may not talk about on another Zombie Girls episode in the future.
Is it worthy of discussion? Is that something we should put on the list?
I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, I'd say so. Okay. On the shark theme, I saw Bait 3D.
Wow.
That was, yeah, it knew what it was. It was a 3D shark movie about, you know, it's sharks.
Shark in a grocery store.
That's right, yeah. It's like an underground kind of supermarket thing, and there's a tsunami, and it picks up the sharks and drops them in the this underground supermarket. It is what it is. It was better than Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. Let's say
okay.
That. Also, that
that's
thing.
Sad when that's the barometer.
Yeah. Well, it's no Jaws. Yeah, it's definitely not right. Up there. Also, caught up with the Tall Man at the Fright Fest thing. That was an interesting one. That might be worth doing a show on, maybe. Although it's pretty spoilery. Like, we'd have to have a big spoiler warning because there is a twist which I can't decide if I liked or not. I'd need to see it again to see whether I did or not. Have you guys seen that already?
I've seen it. Yeah, it's definitely got a big twisty twist, and you're just like, the movie takes such a left turn that I was so with the movie at that point. When we got to the left turn, I was like, I don't know. I'm with you. I don't know how I feel about the end of that movie.
Yeah.
I did like the chase scene where she's chasing the car that's abducted the kid.
Yeah.
That was pretty incredible.
Yeah, pretty brutal, actually. I mean, it wasn't really a very gory film or very scary film or anything, but like the bit at the start where that there's a lady sort of tied up and you see her in the background and you're like, hang on, wait, did I just see that? And then the character notices her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Atmospheric. And the story goes, apparently, the lead role was going to go to Jennifer Garner, but then she'd never heard of the director, so she said, oh, I'd like to see something else that the director had done. So they sent her Martyrs. And and then she never called them back. How true that is, I don't know, but that's how the story goes.
God.
Also caught up with the documentary Room 237, which is about The Shining.
Oh, well, yeah, how was that?
It has to be a joke. It's all these theories about interpretations of The Shining, and some of them are just so crazy, just ridiculous. There's one scene where Danny stands up and he's wearing a jumper that has a rocket on it, and someone thinks that that's Stanley Kubrick's confession that he directed the fake footage of the moon landing.
Oh my, what?
It's that level of what, really? And so it's pieced together by sort of four or five different people's interpretations of the movie, and I guess the makers of the documentary are not falling down on either side, but they're just saying, here are some ideas about interpretations of The Shining, see what you think. It's worth watching. It got me in the mood to watch The Shining again, at least. But for the most part,
he's writing a sequel to The Shining.
Yeah,
I heard about this. Yeah,
what are your thoughts on that?
I disagree. I think
it sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah, I think Stephen King should leave The Shining alone because when he got involved in the made-for-TV version, it was awful.
Oh, I know that one.
He's relinquished his rights to the property.
Yeah. I was watching. I think it was before Halloween. Maybe it was after Halloween. I don't know. It was something where Stephen King. They had him like sit down and talk about sort of like the history of horror. And in that he talked a lot about his own movies too.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about The Shining and how much he like hated the movie version, which I mean, he's said that a lot before.
Yeah.
That he really liked what Stanley Kubrick did, even though it was so amazing.
Don't you like keep that to yourself? You know what I mean? Like,
I know.
Right? Yeah. Dude, you're the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're the one that hates it.
Like,
the sole person.
Yeah, exactly. And in that, he talked about how much better he thought the made-for-TV movie one
was. Oh, dear. With Steven Weber.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson versus Stephen Weber. Yeah. That's all you need to
Tough
say.
Choice.
Listen, I like wings as much as the next person. But let's not act like they're the same caliber actor. Let's just keep it real.
Yeah. It's closer to the book, but there are certain things in the book that will not work on film. Like hedge animals coming to life, that worked in the
book. I know.
It does not work on film at all.
And that was one of the things that really bothered him. And also the ending, instead of having like kitchen freeze, it burns down.
I think the hedge animals would work if you had like...
David Fincher doing it.
I was gonna say Henson Studios or, or like Peter Jackson redoing The Shining.
Maybe.
I could see that working, but I mean, at the time that they did it, the CGI in it's so crappy.
Yeah.
Awful. Would have been terrible.
Oh, so they were like CGI. What? I've never seen the TV version.
Yeah.
I've only ever seen the Shining. Oh dear, that hurts me a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, continue, Miss Jodie.
Following that was a screening of the uncut version of The Shining, which I didn't know existed until that time. It's an extra sort of 20, 25 minutes long. Really interesting. I can see why they cut a lot of things out, though, because it affects the pacing a lot. But there are some cool shots, so if you're a fan of the film, try and check out that version if you can. Just a couple of non-horror-related things, just to throw out. Django Unchained, brilliant. Hobbit, pretty good. And Life of Pi, incredible.
Awesome.
Hmm. Were you a fan of the book?
I didn't read the book.
Okay.
Did you?
No. Okay. Somebody gave it to me as a gift, and I haven't. It's been like sitting on my shelf for years.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that's.
Did you hear that, gift giver? He's a dust collector. No. Aren't you glad you spent your $14 on
it? I have the audiobook. I've tried listening to it about 3 different times, and it just puts me to sleep.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody that's read it and seen it. I know people that have done one or the other, but not both. So I don't know how it's meant to hold up if you've read it. But yeah, really, really, really good.
Awesome. Good times. So would you like to go, Ariel? Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay.
like Rachel, I cannot remember that many movies.
Well, as they were listening, I was like crossing stuff out and adding things. I remembered a bunch of stuff I've seen.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways.
So in your face.
Oh. Since the last time we recorded, I have seen a lot of horror movies, but not that recently. So recently, I guess I just haven't been watching that many horror movies. I don't know why. But I did get this, a couple of collections of like Hammer horror.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of the ones that I thought were interesting but not as good as a lot of them. One of them was this like box set of Dracula movies, and there are a lot of really great Hammer Dracula movies, and then there are some that are like, I don't know, like fourth tier one.
Nice.
One of them was Brides of Dracula, and in that, like, you've got Peter Cushing as Van Helsing, but Christopher Lee is not in the movie as Count Dracula. Count Dracula is not there. So it's like this woman goes into like a boarding school to be a teacher, and they're basically like the mistress, or what do you call like the woman who heads a boarding school?
Headmistress?
Probably.
Yeah. HCIC?
She's like hiding her, I think it's her son or something, who's a Dracula, and who's a vampire, and he's like super super handsome, supposedly, and you know, this like blonde, good looking, you know, guy who should be named Cliff or something. And then, you know, obviously this woman like falls for him, but
he's a Dracula.
Shut up.
Everyone knows he's a Dracula.
Anyways, so that one wasn't as good, but I have to say, even when they're bad, I still really enjoy them. I don't know if it's just because I have like a soft spot for those movies, but it's like a comfort thing, and they're fun and enjoyable even when like the plot is not as great as some of them are. The funniest one though is actually Dracula AD, and this one they made in 1972. It was like the first movie they'd made, I think, in over a decade or something, and it's Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing like reprising their roles. But basically the plot is that Christopher Lee, I think they only show him like in parts of the movies, because I think he's maybe dead at the, he dies early on or something.
Spoiler alert.
Oh God, sorry. Anyways, it's not that important to the movie, but then
it's only been 30 years. So I would have liked a spoiler alert. Jesus. Rude.
But so Chris Christopher Lee is Dracula this time. Actually Dracula.
He's not all Dracula. He's capital D Dracula.
He had been killed in the previous movie. And so basically there's this guy who like wants to reanimate Dracula. And he's been like, I think, burned. So he's in like ashes and they have to do this thing. But the movie starts. Well, okay. There's like a early thing where it's like back in time when you see Dracula dying. And then all of a sudden you're in like the 70s in
disco era Dracula.
No. Oh. They're doing hippies.
Oh.
And beatniks.
Oh.
Mixed together. And they do, like, obviously the directors had no idea what that generation was like or that what that
sounds like a total, like, young whippersnappers kind of situation.
Exactly. So they take all these, you know, these hippies, and basically they go and take over, like, super rich, stuck-up people's apartments in New York and then have, like, a huge party where there's like drugs and sex and dancing and rock music and all the you know, the rich people are in their apartments like scared and horrified at what these youngins are doing, and it's hysterical.
Is it intentionally hysterical? No.
I don't think so.
Fact that it was directed by Grandpa Simpson makes it funny.
I don't think it was intentionally. It doesn't read that way anyway.
Okay.
It reads like they were trying to make it realistic, but it's just kind of funny instead. And so that's the whole, you know, the whole movie. You've got these ridiculous, like, hippie characters talking, and, you know, and so he, like, convinces them to reanimate Dracula, and then, of course, that does not go as planned, and, you know, death ensues and all of that. Anyways, so that one, I would say, is entertaining just for the fact that you have these, like, ridiculous hippie characters and scenes. And, you know, Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee are always fun to watch on screen. And that's about all I've been watching lately.
Good time.
I haven't seen much else, honestly. Oh, I know. Nope, I just lost the name of the movie. That's really embarrassing.
I can come back.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, right. Stakeland.
Oh, yeah. Did you finally see that?
Yes, I did. I liked it a lot. Yeah. I really liked it.
It's definitely, it's kind of grim.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of like almost like The Walking Dead, but with vampires, because you kind of have...
You mean Dracula's? I'm sorry. I love you. I miss you. I got to make up for 8 months of teasing.
Anyways, I'm just going to pass over all of that. Because you have, it's sort of like what people do, you know, how they deal with the, you know, after effects of something like a vampire plague almost,
right.
and what happens to society and how the different, you know, people deal with it. So I thought it was really interesting, and I liked the relationship between the guy and the kid. I thought that was really cool too.
Awesome. Yeah, I liked it too. Although it was pretty, it was like gritty stuff.
It was, definitely.
There was nun rape and
that was
pregnant lady death, and like, it's pretty.
It was really dark, but then it kind of has like a hopeful ending.
So, okay, what have I been watching? First of all, I want to talk about Dread. Has anybody else here seen Dread yet?
No, I haven't.
Not yet.
Okay, so if you are a fan of like kind of over the top violent 80s action movies, think like RoboCop, First Predator, like that style and kind of attitude, you are going to be in fucking heaven with this movie. It's Judge Dredd, which I went back and watched the original Judge Dredd movie, which is fucking unbearable.
Yeah,
I feel like opens the shot of his codpiece. The outfits were designed by Versace.
Oh, that's
so he has this giant plastic eagle on his shoulder.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's so bad. But anyways, this is nothing like that. It's like in the future, sort of dystopian, and there's like these super structures that are packed with people, and there's a new drug called slow-mo, which makes you feel like you're in slow motion. So there's these like amazing scenes of really like visually stunning slow motion scenes, unlike maybe like the typical slow motion scene. It's really cool, like the art direction in it. But the whole movie, if you've seen that movie, The Raid, it's kind of like similar to that, where the whole movie takes place inside this superstructure. basically.
Oh, the raid is awesome.
Right. I think you're really going to like Dredd. Mm. And it's him and this rookie cop, and she kind of has some psychic abilities. And the Mama, Lena Headley plays Mama, mm-hmm. who's the head of this, like a gang and drug syndicate. Basically is like, they tried to like get the cops to leave. When they didn't leave, she's like, fuck it. She shuts down the whole thing, goes into full lockdown. And she's like, tells everyone over the speaker, like, whoever brings him to me is going to get money or whatever. Mm. And so the rest of it is him trying to fight his way to her, and her sending just like waves of people at them trying to kill him. And it's fucking bloody as fuck and amazing. That's right. Fucking bloody as fuck. That is the only way I can describe it. And it is so awesome. It was like the most fun I've seen, like movie I've seen. Because I have a soft spot for like the old Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. I mean, I don't like him anymore. He's terrible and like this man.
Oh, I know.
But like Commando, like that kind of level of violence and machismo it's like somebody really went in a time machine and got a movie and brought it today.
I can't wait to see that.
Sucks that nobody fucking saw it in the theater. Sucks. Because yeah. It's so good. So definitely check that out. Yes, I did not oversell that shit. So check. I'm confident in that. Okay, so that was my number one thing recommendation. Other stuff I watched, I'll run through a little more. I finally saw Woman in Black. And because I had been cautioned that it wasn't that great, I was actually really pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
Seen a lot of Hammer stuff, so that may have worked in my favor. So everything felt fresh to me, and I also didn't have any expectation going into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I watched it in the perfect setting. I was by myself in my room with the lights off,
mm-hmm.
and it completely like creeped me out, and I thought it was good. And the end was a little shwang wang wang, but other than that, I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I saw The Hobbit, which I really liked, but I'm a total geek for those movies.
Yeah.
I was moved and very excited. I can't wait to see Smaug. I want to see his face. Let's see what else. Oh, I saw John Dies at the End. Has anybody read that book? Or I guess it's books.
No, not yet. I have it, but I haven't read it yet.
I love it. It's a really weird. There's like the narrative because it was written as like a little like web series.
Yeah, yeah. I need to read it for a while.
Hang on one second. Jody, is Rachel cutting out on your end?
A tiny bit, not loads, but a little tiny bit.
Okay. Give a shout if I keep cutting out. Am I still cutting out?
That's okay.
No.
Okay. So I really, really loved the book, so I was very excited to see the movie. And I will say that while they had to excise a lot of stuff to make it work as a movie, which is always a bummer, you want to see scenes,
mm-hmm.
and there's like a major plot point that is removed from the book that is just not even addressed in the movie. I did think that he got the spirit of the book right, and I did enjoy it quite a bit. I thought John and David were really likable, and I liked seeing the meat monster come to life. And of course, you can never go wrong with Clancy Brown. So I would recommend that for people who like John Dies at the End.
That's cool, because I read some reviews where people didn't really care for it, so I was afraid it was going
to be
really
bad. I do feel like you need to read the book because it fills in a lot of holes.
Ah, okay.
But I would not say read the book and then go watch the movie, because you're going to be doing is going, they changed that. You need a little distance between the two, but I did like it. And then last two, because they're kind of connected, I finally saw Kill List. Anybody seen Kill List?
Yeah.
No.
It's basically about these hired killers who get like one last job, basically. And the first part of the movie feels like a drama,
mm-hmm.
like this marriage that's imploding, and this guy who's like really struggling with not necessarily wanting to be a hitman anymore, but his friends kind of pushing into it. And then at the very end, it turns into kind of a horror movie, really fucks up grim ending, which reminded me of another movie, but I'm not gonna say what that. But like right before it happened, I like shouted it, and I was like, that's blah, blah, blah. And then it was like a reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy the movie?
Yeah, it almost felt like it couldn't make up what kind of movie it was, because as you say, it starts off like a sort of kitchen sink drama, and then it turns into like a weird sort of hitman thriller, and then it turns into a horror movie at the end. But it somehow fits, it somehow works. And, you know, those things don't need to be separate necessarily. So, but yeah, at the end I'm going, what? Because it starts going a bit sort of surreal towards the end. And at the end you're just like, fuck. Holy shit. But yeah, it's a recommend, I think, yeah.
I want to talk about that weird tonal shift. And I love the part where they were running through the tunnels. I was like, oh, fuck, what the hell is going on?
Mm.
I don't want to say anything because I don't want to spoil it for the other people on the show. I would recommend checking out Kill List. It's definitely ones that you have to know going into it. You're a good hour into the movie before it starts to kind of go sideways on you.
Mm.
Okay.
But I did actually really like it. Okay, so the reason I brought that up is because I've also been watching, and I don't know, Jody, you maybe can back me up. I've been watching the show Utopia. It's a British show.
Oh, I haven't caught up with that yet.
It has the main character playing a similar role in it, and it's like a conspiracy theory. There's this comic, this graphic novel comes out, and it's these people get like really into it, and there's like a cult around it, and like not like a cult, but like, you know, like a cult following,
mm-hmm.
and like people who like read all these meaning into the different things in it. And someone gets a hold. It was written by a guy who was in like a mental institution,
mm-hmm.
and someone gets a hold of an unreleased copy of the sequel, and basically whatever the power they like the quote unquote they don't want anyone to see it, so they start killing people to prevent it from getting out, like trying to track down the manuscript. And this group of people who have met online as fans of the first one kind of have to band together to try to like survive.
Right.
And seriously, like the most beautiful TV show I have ever seen in my life. Have you seen like commercials for it or anything?
No, I haven't. I don't really get to catch up on a lot of TV until like a year later when people tell me it was good, and then I finally catch up on it. So, but it's on them. It's on. We've got like an on-demand thing for the channel that it's on. So I'll check it out on your recommendation, definitely.
I haven't. It's 6 episodes long, and I've seen the first 4.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I fucking love it. Like a little obsessively, because it's the prettiest thing I've ever seen. Like everything is like these really like vista shots, and the color is like hyper saturated. It almost looks like you like when you see oil with water on it, it gets mm-hmm. like that sheen of color. Like it's just like color popping everywhere. It's beautiful, and it's really good. I like it quite a bit. But yeah, so anyways, if you get a chance to check out Utopia, highly recommended. All right, that's my what you've been watching.
Can I just interject something really quickly on TV, since you mentioned Utopia. Has anybody seen Black Mirror yet?
I just got the first episode. I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard.
Okay. I think you guys would like it. It's written by the same guy that did Dead Set, if you remember that Big Brother zombie thing. Yeah.
And, awesome.
Yeah, the second season is just about to wrap up over here. But yeah, I'm still behind on those two. But yeah, really, really good. Recommend.
Described as sort of like a Twilight Zone, but with a modern twist that it's all about like the dark side of technology.
Yeah, because the Black Mirror is supposed to be like, if you're just looking at your phone and it's switched off, it's just like it's reflecting, but it's all black and you can't really see anything. And oh, speaking of phone, my phone's ringing. Oh fuck! How unprofessional! I don't know how to turn it off.
7 days.
So, who would like to take the synopsis of of dead hooker in a trunk?
The synopsis is there's a dead hooker in their trunk.
they try to bury it. Hilarity ensues.
Yeah. That's it.
I think there's a little more. So, okay, obviously, let's see. This is from 2010, directed by Jen and Sylvia Soska, which they call themselves the Soska sisters, which makes me happy because they don't go the other route with the sisters Soska. Like the right. You know, like the brothers, whatever their names are, that did like that terrible alien abduction movie.
Mm.
You know what I'm talking about? Oh, you don't. No. You don't. They also did the Poughkeepsie Grimm. Tapes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Anyways, so the film is shot in Vancouver, and it has a very Canadian vibe to it. It's definitely an ode to Grindhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of like over the top action, dark humor, some like, you know, absurdist violence.
Yeah, lots of blood.
And then like one torture scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the film follows there's the badass, the twins are the badass and the geek, because nobody has names.
And they're
except
played
for the
by the sisters.
Played by Sylvia and Jen. I don't know which. Sorry.
Sylvia is the badass. Jen is the geek.
Thank you.
Awesome. Okay. And then they have their friend, the junkie. And the geek's friend is the goody two-shoes, who sort of looks like the love child of Owen Wilson and Dave Foley. Come on, you know what I mean.
You're kind of right.
Okay, so the film opens, I guess we don't have to go that deep with it. So basically, they are going to run a couple of errands. The geek girl wants to go pick up her goody two-shoes friend at youth group, and the geek girl wants to take her junkie friend to go get drugs. So they get in the car, they cruise to the church where they pick up the goody two shoes friend and meet the priest, who's kind of like
a little wackadoo.
And this is where we start to feel like maybe there's something off with the priest, because in the previous scene, which I skipped over because I thought it was unimportant, but now I remember it was important. You saw a guy with a hoodie beat a hooker to death. Mm-hmm. And the hoodie dude shows up and is talking to the priest, and you're like, foreshadowing. So they go out to the car and they're like, what's that smell? And they discover there's a hooker in the trunk of the car.
A dead hooker.
Right. In the trunk. So yes, a dead hooker.
Just a smelly hooker.
Dead. So, not that all hookers are smelly, because just positive on this show. Yeah, so anyways,
I didn't mean that sarcastically like it sounded.
Well, you sound like it's the answer, but yeah, we are. So, what was I saying? Okay, so Geek wants to call the cops. Badass is like, no, we're just going to bury her. So
because she can't remember what she did last night, and she's afraid that she might have been the one to kill the hooker.
Right.
Well, okay, because of that, you're missing kind of an important plot point. The film actually begins with Badass having a dream, and it's actually a memory of her seeing her dad beat the crap out of her mom, and the mom gets killed, and then Badass ends up killing Dad.
Yes, you're right.
So that's kind of why she's the way she is.
They're basically like taking a road trip to bury the dead hooker somewhere. Because
that's right.
The goody two-shoe guy that we need to bury her, like treat her body properly, kind of.
Right.
So they decide to bury her, and then it's like kind of like a road movie after
a little
that.
Bit, yeah. So they go to this hotel where they like the geek girl goes up to the.
Yeah, and can I just say, I was watching this movie last night, starting at like 3:30 in the morning or something. Mm-hmm. And that scene, like, really threw me, because I was just sort of, like, casually watching this movie really, really sleepy, and then all of a sudden you walk into this, like, motel room, and there's, like, a guy kind of, like, fondling a goat, and I was like, what the fuck happened? I'm off a cliff with this movie, like, where is this going?
Yeah, this is definitely an example of the dark humor.
Yes.
Of the, mm-hmm. when he's like getting fresh with his goat while watching porn, and he's like, oh, goaty baby. So, like, so the girl kind of surprises you because she basically agrees to let him have sex with the dead hooker in return for the hotel room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the scene you see her, she's like washing out the dead hooker.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, in the bathtub.
I'm not sure what the purpose of that was.
With that scene, yeah.
But,
And anyway. She's also, like, kind of surprised that the guy at the hotel was, like, cool with the deal.
Right.
She says something about that, like...
Well, he doesn't know that the hooker's dead, though.
Yes, so he gets his dead hooker hump on. And, they're in the hotel room and the cops show up. So, Badass does a sexy dance and seduces them. And then ends up cuffing them and leaving them... naked in a bed together for naked goat man to find and he gets a little look on his face like, hello, boy.
Yeah.
So clearly he's pretty flexible. Dead people, naked cops. also a very sex positive attitude. So let's see. From there, they decide to go and bury the body.
Yeah.
But the junkie needs to make a pit stop first. She needs to get some drugs. So she heads back to her house where she hooks back up with her ex-boyfriend and they're burst in upon by some triads who kill the boyfriend, or they injure the boyfriend, injure her, like cut her arm partway off.
With a chainsaw.
With a chainsaw. Yeah. So, and while they're waiting outside, one of the geek girls standing out there calling the cops, I guess she's had like a crisis of conscience, but someone comes up behind her, hits her head with a bat, and her eye pops out.
See, I love that scene, because before when she calls the cops, they show right up, and then she's on the phone and she's like, "We have drugs, lots of drugs. We're picking up drugs right now. Did I mention I have a gun? Will you send some fucking cops?"
Yeah.
This is, I love the dialogue in that part. Also, I like the shot, the way the sort of the composition of the shot where you've got her like in the foreground, and I kept waiting for something to happen in the background. Mm-hmm. So, like, really shocking when it kind of comes from somewhere else and her eye just like flies out.
The eye was pretty cool.
Yes, that was definitely, I will say one thing about this film, for people who don't like it, you have to admit that you never see whatever's coming, you know. Mm-hmm. It definitely keeps you on your toes. So they get the junkie out of there. They go out to the woods and do some like Rambo style hair work on them. There's tape over the eye for
She takes like electrical tape and just like.
They get out of the junkie's place, and then they're standing there arguing over the road. And the best part is the junkie goes to light a cigarette, and Goody Two Shoes is trying to tell her, you know, don't. And she says, you know, I just got my arm cut off. I don't think a cigarette will hurt me. She flings her arm out and it gets snapped off by an oncoming truck. And that's, and watching Sylvia Saska jump up off the fender of the truck and punch the trucker. That was an awesome move.
And then she like picks up the arm and brings it back to the car.
Yeah.
We'll just take this up later.
Exactly.
How arms work.
The girls are both, trained in martial arts, so they do all their own stunts.
Oh, that's cool.
That helped, I think, with the believability, because like you see kind of like willowy girls being action stars and you're like, yeah, I don't think that, you know what I mean, like they're not typically work. The punches and things like that don't, they look, you know, kind of soft and sweet and not really, you're not really buying it, you know. So I think that's kind of part of why you kind of buy her as the badass, is she actually has some like skills.
Yeah, definitely.
So then they head to the forest and do a little bit of like field medicine where they use electric tape to close the girl's eye.
And like
fishing wire
to sew up her arm.
Which magically works after that.
Yeah. She's kind of to hold it a tiny bit, but it's attached.
Oh my god, by the very end, she's like punching people, like carrying fat bugs, and she's good to go. So they go their separate ways, and Goody Two Shoes and Geek Boy, or first Goody Two Shoes gets in a cab with God, who kind of counsels him not to leave the geek girl behind. And yes, that's right, in a cab with God, stay with me.
She didn't mean that he was like praying to God. She meant that God was actually
got
there.
In a taxi cab with God. It was like heavenly cab. So they decide to go to the hooker's house and investigate, try to figure out maybe who. Oh wait, I forgot something else important. They've been followed throughout the film up until this point by a cowboy.
Yeah.
And finally, the cowboy confronts them and like turns out he's the hooker's pimp. He's like, you have my whore. And he ropes badass. Gets her behind the horse. Because that is the last fucking thing you would have ever imagined.
I was just like, what? Where did this come from?
It is a little.
Yeah. Did I miss something? I was so tired. And then like. Cowboys start popping up
because that's like that's what you need at this point. That's like the last thing you haven't seen. So apparently when they shot this and she got dragged behind the horse, like the guy went super fast, faster than he was supposed to. It like took a bunch of her skin off. Messed up. So okay, back to the hooker's house. They discover a pug that his name is Billy and he's very fat. And very cute.
Your little mascot.
Yes, and they take him with him, and Junkie Girl's like holding him with her busted ass arm.
Yeah.
And should we just sort of, there's like some other little stuff here that kind of goes on, but that's the most part we get to the end. So spoiler warning, we're going to talk about the end of the movie. So, Badass goes home and ends up getting attacked in her apartment by the person that killed the hooker, the hooded dude, and is taken captive, basically, and brought to this warehouse by the hooded guy and his minions.
Well, you forgot that while they're in the hooker's house, they see a picture of a guy, a police sketch of a guy who had been killing hookers, and then they walk out to the car and see the dude walking down the street in a hooded sweatshirt and baseball cap and torture and dismember him.
Yes. This is where it suddenly turns into a weird torture film.
Yeah.
And then she goes home.
Yes. Sorry. Not about, I've seen so many like castrations lately. Ties to the point where I completely forget about them. But yeah, so they cut off his
Johnson.
Cock balls, whatever.
Junk.
Yeah, and chip out his teeth and basically kill him and then go on their merry way like nothing happened. Except for, I will say that Goody Two Shoes has the decency to like barf every 5 minutes in this movie. Where is he getting all this barf from? Like the 10th time he throws up, I'm like, how much did this guy have for breakfast? So, okay, now she goes home, gets kidnapped. They take her to the hooded guy's lair, who is revealed to be the priest from the beginning of the film. And the person that they killed was actually his brother. So,
whoops, oopsies.
And then you see his sad, sad story. Who would like to break down his sad, sad story?
Basically, it was a botched circumcision, and he's got a forked penis.
Oops.
showing his different, like, over the years, like, just sort of laughing or gawking.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah. What's wrong with you?
What the fuck is wrong with you?
To be fair, if you saw a forked penis,
you would be like, what the hell is
that? I mean, commentary is required, right? You try to be nice. You always, like, have to put on your game face when they bust. Like, oh, it's the biggest thing I've ever seen. But, like, how does that fit in your pants?
I just thought about that YouTube video, gay women will marry your boyfriend.
Oh,
it is literally the biggest one we've ever seen.
That is a great video. I love that video. Have you seen that?
No.
It's a response to the gay men will marry your
okay.
your girlfriends. It's really funny. I'll show it to you after the show. Anywho, but yeah, so I mean, like, if you saw a forked penis, you would have to say something, right?
I'd imagine, yeah.
Oh, you're no, so that's why I'm asking.
Would I say something? Yeah, probably. I'd have to say something.
But I love that basically, like, what it basically boils down to at this point is that the whole movie would never have happened if this guy was not so insecure about his penis.
That's very true. He wouldn't be angry and like having to like kill all these women and
yeah,
just because he's sad about his forked penis.
Yeah. So I guess the story is, dudes, get over your dick. All right. So then there's the boss battle, the final confrontation where the sisters team up and take care of the priest and literally ride off into the sunset where they dispose of the hooker in the lake and Geek Girl and Goody Two Shoes consummate their love.
Yes.
Chastely. That's it, right?
Yeah.
So, thoughts, ladies. Explody Joe, what did you think?
It's hard to know how to rate a film like this because it's obviously very low budget and this is the first feature length film that the Oscars had did. I was fairly impressed though, to be honest. I mean, going in I had very low expectations, I think. But it's interesting that you mentioned that they're martial artists, because one thing that I thought was that the stunts and the fight choreography looked really good, considering like that's usually something that would show up really badly in a film of this, you know, sort of budget and level. So I wondered if maybe the actors had like a theatre background or something like that, because that's one thing that stuck out as unexpectedly really good, the fight scenes and stuff. And it was pretty funny as well in places, again, sort of unexpected. I liked it when Goody Two Shoes, he's like chatting to the geek girl at the beginning. He says, oh yeah, so we've got our anti-pornography bake sale coming up. That's going to be really good. So it's just like big exaggeration of how innocent he is and how cute and good he is. One thing that bugged me, though, was the handheld got pretty annoying pretty quickly. Just really shaky. It just kind of gave me a bit of a seasick kind of thing. But there's not much I can really complain about.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that trend has sort of died of the handheld shaky cam. Mm.
Yeah.
When we first started podcasting, like, every movie that came out was shaky. I was like, oh my god, stop the visual dissonance. I can't take it.
Yeah.
What about... Now, you have... Well, actually, let's go to... I know Sarah's feelings are positive on the film. What did you think?
Me?
Yes.
You know, I just thought the movie was a lot of fun. I thought it was pretty funny, but I have a really dark sense of humor. I definitely think this is the third time I've seen it, and I enjoy the hell out of it every time. So, yeah. And about the fight scenes you were saying, Joe. Apparently the Soska sisters have been like acting and doing martial arts since they were like five.
Right. And I think the actress that played Junkie is a stunt woman, if I'm correct. But I didn't realize that until after I'd seen it.
Yeah.
So that makes sense too.
Well, she does good arm fling.
Yes, she does.
So how about you, Miss Ariel?
Well, honestly, I think I would have liked this movie a lot better had I watched it under better circumstances. You know, I was really tired. I had already seen one of their movies already, like, right before. And then I watched this when I really wasn't in the mood to see another film at all. Mm-hmm. So I think if I had seen it at a different time, I probably would have enjoyed it a lot more. But I still really liked parts of it. You know, I did like the black humor, although I almost wish there had been a little bit more of it or something. I liked...
Great. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I liked that, you know, like Rachel said, you didn't know what was going to happen next. All these bizarre things are happening. And, you know, like after the goat scene, I sort of figured that was what was going to happen.
And then right.
I was on board with it, you know, so I liked, you know, what I saw after that. But it's like, it's not, I don't think it's going to be a movie, unlike Sarah, that I'll revisit a bunch of times. Like, I enjoyed seeing it, but I don't foresee wanting to see it like over and over again. Mm-hmm. One of the things that threw me a little was the music. Did that throw anybody else off?
I thought the music was actually very good. I was pleased with how they used the music.
Mm-hmm. I thought there were, like, some scenes, it was really funny where they used, like, kind of off music that you would not expect mm-hmm. to be one scene. Like, it was completely mismatched and it worked really well. And then other ones, I thought that it didn't work. It, like, worked against the material. But maybe that's just me.
Gotcha.
Obviously, that's just me. Like, nope, you're wrong. You're totally wrong. But there were some scenes that, like, with really bad acting where it's kind of, like, intentional, you can tell. At least I hope that was me.
What do you mean?
And that, you know, that's kind of funny, too. And all of the gory, violent scenes were, you know, really entertaining. Like, the arm scene, taping up the eye, and the chainsaw stuff, that was... you know, it was pretty entertaining, and like the blood splatters and mm-hmm. like that were pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I really didn't like the music last night because I wrote here that the music was picked by a crack addict who had never watched the movie before.
Tell us how you really.
Yeah, Mariel. Really like that was like at like 4:30 in the morning. I don't know. Oh, I have a question about the movie too.
Okay.
When they're burying the hooker in the woods and she like sits up and then badass like hits her with the shovel and she falls back down, was she actually alive the whole time or was that just like muscle spasms.
I don't think we find out, because they say both, don't they? That, oh, she was alive the whole time, and oh, that was probably just a, you know, reflex thing. Because doesn't she say, wow, rigor mortis is fucked up?
Yeah. So, I think muscle spasm, because at the end of the movie, we haven't talked about this yet, I don't want to talk about it. You do see her death scene, which looks pretty complete.
But then one of them, like when she sat up, I think it's the nerdy girl says that she looked at her or something when she sat up.
Yeah.
Help look at you.
Well, that's a good point. One thing that I really did like is the scene where they're like at the beach, and all of a sudden it kind of turns into almost like an 80s teen movie. Where
like the campfire scene.
And all of a sudden talking about their feelings, and, you know, the two of them sort of have this romantic moment, and I feel like
you totally get me.
Yeah, that was actually really nice.
Yeah, I really liked that, because it was kind of like just stuck in the middle there, but it worked, and it was like a good homage or something. Yeah.
A lot of tone shifts in a Sosca film.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. I think that's it.
Okay, good times. All right, so I'm somewhere in between everybody. The note I wrote was absurd but never boring, and I feel like I've watched so many fucking movies, and with the resurgence of sort of Grindhouse, I feel like I thought going into it I knew the sort of Grindhouse rules and knew what to expect, so when it was actually fresh and surprising, it wasn't just sort of like a machete ripoff,
right?
Mm-hmm. I was really impressed by that, and I think there is a spark of something, and this is something again that I felt with American Mary, where the girls have something interesting to say. And in one hand, they're really blessed by having gotten so much attention around this first film. But there's another side to that where they haven't been able to really like hone in on exactly what that is, and do like a couple of films sort of under the radar to kind of get their vibe down and polish it before presenting something.
Right, to a mass audience.
That being said, I did like the movie, and I did walk away from it liking it. Although I do feel like because they're female filmmakers, they do get a little bit of an immunity idol for things that if I saw it in a film by a man, I would be less comfortable with. In this film, it's the death of the hooker.
Right.
There's a really prolonged like beating scene that takes place at the end.
Yeah.
It kind of goes on and on. I was like, die already.
That it was going to be really long, and that you like felt like you needed to fast forward.
Like, how many times can the person get kicked?
Right. And so I was expecting it to be long, and I was kind of waiting for that scene to pop up. And then when it did, it's like halfway through it, I thought that was long. I was like, wow, that was really long. It's going to end. And then it just like kept going and going and going and going. I was like, okay, time to break out the Sudoku or something.
But I appreciated the humor quite a bit. I feel like it was made by people who really love genre films.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that sense of, you know, appreciation for the genre, which I like as a fangirl.
Yeah, you can, like,
kind of
feel their passion when in the movies, you know.
And I also like, there's a certain aspect of, like, there's this idea that women can't do horror because they're afraid to kind of go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they do a good job of going there, especially with the low budget. Like, they go dark, they go exploitation, they go violent, they go torture, they kind of, it's sort of like a catch-all of like, oh, you think girls can't do this, well, check this out.
Mm-hmm.
Which of course I like, you know, but and I would definitely I would say at the end of this I would recommend the film, like I would say, yeah, check this out for sure.
To people that are into horror, I would definitely say that.
I wouldn't give it to a normie and be like, here you go, castration.
I want to talk about this more when we talk about American Mary, but I definitely feel like what you were saying, that they need a little more time. I feel like there are things that they're trying to say with different scenes in the movies, but that aren't like fully realized. And I definitely felt that with American Mary, but I felt it a little bit.
Gotcha. So I say consensus.
A cautious recommendation, I suppose.
I wouldn't recommend it to everybody, but I definitely would suggest it.
Yeah, I don't think everybody's going to like it. And I think, like Ariel said, you've got to be in the right mood, I think, to enjoy it.
Yeah, I feel like it's a movie to be watched with others.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Have someone to cheer with when the eye pops out or when the arm goes off. Sitting out here by yourself, probably you were like, meh.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to their second film, American Mary. If, like me, you couldn't wait to see the movie, it has not been released in the U.S., but you can get it on Blu-ray region-free on Amazon, on the UK version of Amazon. So if this you enjoy the synopsis and you want to check it out firsthand, then definitely pick it up. I want to talk about it, but I feel like we need to be straight about there's going to be some serious spoilers in this.
Yeah.
Because in order to talk about specific scenes, we got to spoil stuff. We'll save when we get to the warehouse, we'll say big spoiler alert.
Right.
You know, don't keep listening if you don't want everything spoiled. But with that said, I don't want to hold back from talking about.
I think it would be really hard to talk about this film without talking about the scenes.
Yeah.
Right. It's not one of those movies that the end is really the big reveal. Like it's pretty much every chapter has a reveal as you go through it. So would someone like to take the synopsis?
Let's see. Mary is a surgical student who is, she's bogged down by a lot of bills. She decides to go to a strip club called Bourbon A Go-Go to take a job, to see about getting a job. Brings her resume. Owner looks at it, says he's got some special work for her. Takes her down to the basement under the club. And offers her $5,000 to make sure that the guy that's getting tortured down there doesn't die. She agrees. Little by little, she starts getting more work from the guy. And meanwhile, her dickhead surgical residency teacher he invites her to a party, or he recommends that. Another doctor invite her to a party. Turns out that she gets her drink gets spiked and she gets raped by said dickhead. And then she drops out of school and it just kind of she has doctor kidnapped and uses him to work out her body mod practice and just kind of goes from there.
Yeah, the one major plot sort of point I would say that we kind of skipped over is after she is able to help the or you know work on the guy that is being tortured to keep him alive a bit longer, she gets a phone call from someone named Beatrice who has heard of her work and wants to talk to her about something else. When she doesn't agree to meet with her, she just shows up. And when she arrives, she's someone who's sort of a little bit of a plastic surgery nightmare. She's had all of this work done to make her look like Betty Boop.
Yeah, her face looks very plastic and
Betty
Boop-like.
Yeah. But it turns out it is intentional. It's not just, like Real Housewives of whatever. Of Vancouver.
Right, where it's like you've had all of these facelifts and eyelids and stuff and it turns into a botched mess.
Right.
Like she did this intentionally to look
right.
like Betty.
It's body modification.
Yeah.
And she has a friend who has some skin she wants removed.
Yeah.
She offers her basically a total of $12,000 to come to this veterinary office after it's been closed and meet with the woman to talk about the procedures that she wants. And this is actually my favorite part of
Me
the
too.
Movie where, so they go there and it's like creepy, like CSI dark lighting. And, there's another woman there who has the same sort of like super plastic appearance, but in her case, she's actually had surgeries to make her appear like a doll.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells her, you know, believe it or not, I haven't had any of these surgeries so that men will look at me in a sexual way.
Yeah, she says that she has done it not to look like a sexual object. That's not her reason for doing
right.
it.
Right. And she was saying, you know, like, I want to be like a doll. And you don't look at a doll in a sexual way because it doesn't have sexual parts.
Right. She says, like, they can't be degraded.
Right.
Yeah.
So what she wants done is to have her nipples removed and to have her like labia sewed up as much as possible and to appear smooth like a doll.
Yeah.
So this is at this point where we the movie got the name American Mary. It like trash rubber merkin situation happening. So she wants to be non-sexualized and impenetrable, which I thought was really kind of an interesting concept. And this is where I thought, like, this is an example of where I'm like, oh my God, these girls are really kind of tapping into something unique and interesting, like a take. I mean, obviously we've all seen Strangeland, so body modification is not totally new in the horror, but it's such an interesting take on it. Like, I've read in interviews how they want to talk about how in plastic surgery, people are having procedures done so that they are able to be more beautiful in the way that society, sees beauty versus body modification, where people are having procedures done to create their own unique identity.
Yeah.
I thought was super fucking interesting, and I was totally on board with the movie at this point.
Yeah, I loved that scene. I thought it was really interesting just what the woman said about why she wanted to look like a doll and kind of like
well, it's just something you never see.
No, like, you never see that and sort of owning her own body and changing it the way she wants it to.
Well, it also makes you kind of confront your ideas. Like, you're like, oh, she's a freak. And the stuff she's asking for, I mean, it's basically genital mutilation. And it's, we think of it as horrifying. So it's interesting to make you kind of like have to stop and think about
like, when it's somebody's choice.
When there's agency around it. Exactly. It makes it really interesting. What did you guys think about this point?
Well, I love the dialogue between Beatrice and her niece.
Right.
She's such a cunt.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, I mean, I think there's definitely some really interesting commentary going on there, but it's just like when she's saying nobody sexualizes dolls, all I could think is,
yeah, they do.
Inflatable dolls? Come on now.
How about you, Miss Jody?
Similar lines to you guys, really. But in those scenes in particular, I was more kind of thinking about it from Mary's point of view and how it kind of felt like a big jump from doing a sort of off-the-cuff operation in a basement and then coming home and, like, you know, crying in the shower and throwing up and then all of a sudden doing this cosmetic surgery the next day. I would have liked a bit more of a transition, really, between those scenes. Personally,
she seems totally okay with doing the surgery, and she like asks the bit, you know, did she really want this done? And when she says, yeah, she does, then she goes back, does the surgery, and that.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Mary is definitely a character that would exist in sort of the Saskia universe. You know what I mean? When you think about sort of the moral ambivalence of both the badass and the geek girl.
Yeah.
For her, like, Mary has that same kind of ambivalence about morality. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
She doesn't have the same sort of horrified struggles that we would necessarily have in a scenario like that.
And I thought that what they were trying to say there, too, is, like, she got really, at least at this part, in the beginning of the film, she got really upset and you know, puked and cried in the shower after fixing this guy up who had been tortured, and she felt sort of forced into this situation. And I think it was really different working on somebody who wanted to have this operation done, had chosen it for themselves. And that's why she wanted to kind of check in with Betty. And maybe that's why she wasn't like sickened by doing it, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't really get that guy was being tortured, though. Maybe that just kind of went over my head. But I just figured that he'd been injured in some way and they've got these doctors, you know, that are working off the books to keep people alive. But
he said there's comments, a line though, where he says, we don't want him to die today.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ariel, I was like, and Matilda, and I was like, wait, they don't want him to die today? Is he being tortured? Like, they kind of got it where I was with you. I thought it was going to be like one of their dudes had like been on a job and gotten injured.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what I got, because that made me think that if Mary's training to be a surgeon, then she would be wanting to keep people alive for the right reasons and not so that he can continue to be tortured. But then she's so hard up with her money that, you know, she's in a desperate situation as well.
Right. And also, I think at this point, she's still talking to her grandmother regularly.
I love her grandmother.
I know, her grandma's funny. Her interactions with her grandma, like the dry sort of delivery to her grandma's like, I saw there was a blonde girl and everyone wanted to have sex with her. She's a whore. So, I mean, that's a perfect example of sort of that dry sort of dark humor that seems to be in their wheelhouse.
Right. And Mary throughout the whole film, like other than her crying there, she really doesn't show much emotion and she's almost kind of monotone throughout. The delivery is very dry and, but it doesn't feel like a one note character though, even though
I actually think Mary's an interesting character.
Exactly. But even though she kind of talks the same way throughout the entire movie and you don't see a lot of emotional ups and downs or inner dialogue, she doesn't feel one note.
I also think it's kind of impressive. There's something interesting that they're saying something interesting in terms of like I don't know how to say this, but like there's a shift at one point where she goes from being sort of ambiguous to sadist and maybe sort of the ease with which or like that anyone can kind of go through this transition.
Yeah.
Really kind of the moral center, is, if not grandma, is actually Beatrice. You know what I mean? Like she kind of is a, even though she is like the stripper who's had all this work done and is kind of outwardly freakish, remains sort of like the kindest and most good character.
That's actually a really good point. Yeah. I thought about that, but yeah.
Okay, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. So, where do we leave off? Okay, we've got the body modification. We've introduced the plot line of the body modification. Mm-hmm. And what happens is they say, or Beatrice, she tells them, like, don't tell anybody about me. And when Ruby, who's the doll character, she asks her when she posts the photos of herself online that she uses a different name. And I think she gets like the name Bloody Mary, which would have been a great name for this movie, which I think would have been the original title. Because I never quite got the American Mary.
Yeah. Why I called that.
American. So she gets introduced to this online community of...
Ooh, wait. The American Mary thing. I think I know why that is. Okay. Is because I was reading an interview and they were talking about with the Soska sisters, and they were talking about how the plastic surgery, people having plastic surgery to meet the American ideal of beauty.
Mm. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And it's also because one of their favorite movies is American Psycho. So that's a reference too.
That makes sense.
So, okay, so at this point, I thought this was sort of where the movie was going. Like, she was going to kind of go down the body modification rabbit hole a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But because this is a Soska film and you never fucking know what's going to happen next, instead it totally kind of takes a left turn where it goes, she ends up, you know, she gets the torture guy to snag the doctor for her, but she also opens
the doctor
studio.
Who raped her.
Yeah. Yeah. She opens a studio where she starts doing body modification off the books from home.
Right. She drops out of medical school to pursue this career.
Mm-hmm. And the rest of the movie is sort of like a little bit, I mean, like there's beats here and there of things that happen, but it's really kind of about her character shifting from someone who, you know, is kind of ambivalent to becoming like a full-on sadist, where she starts working, like looking for work from the torturer, and he starts to kind of fall in love with her and starts fantasizing about her stripping. And there's a part where she's on stage and she's like pouring blood on herself, giving herself like a bloody pearl necklace.
Really,
admit it, when she first goes in for the job interview and she takes off her coat, you had fantasies about her.
No, listen, I think that she's gorgeous.
She looks incredible in this film, definitely.
Yeah.
I've loved since Ginger Snaps, you know, yeah. I mean, now I'm not such a creep for thinking she's hot because she's all grown up, but she looks amazeballs in this movie. She's gorgeous.
Right, and she goes back and forth between wearing, like, you know, the tight black pencil skirt and, like, you know, the high pumps, so then she's wearing, you know, like, lingerie all the time and, you know, operating on people wearing like
the
panties, bra,
I loved
the short
kink.
Rubber apron.
Yeah, I love the kink aesthetic in this movie, where she's wearing like the rubberized apron and the gloves, but then super high femme to like bordering on drag. Mm-hmm. I think it's the aesthetic of this movie. Visually, I think this movie is really cool.
Yeah,
it's
really
a good looking movie. And the step up in terms of production value between the two films is incredible.
Yep. They had a budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? A little money to throw at it. The film, okay, so should we talk spoiler? This is, we'll say spoiler warning. So the police have been kind of periodically showing up asking her about this missing doctor. And she's sort of denying it and saying she has no idea where he is. What we discover is that actually after she had kidnapped or the torturer had brought the doctor to her, and she was like, I'm going to need, 18 hours or whatever to do all these procedures. She'd actually been practicing her body modification technique on him. And she had he went full boxing Helena, like arms and legs on, teeth. I think she filed the teeth, but then she also closed the mouth.
Right. Cause
castration, I guess. And it was like 3D implants, all kinds of stuff. So she goes to this warehouse where it's revealed that he's still alive and hanging from like hooks, like, that like subdermal hooky thing that, is the grossest thing in the world.
Right. Like
the part of the cell where they find the serial killer dude hanging from hooks. Two meat hooks hanging there. Like, and she's like trying to decide what the next thing she's going to do to him is. And she's like, I've been wondering about this ear. I'm wondering why it's still here. And he's like, and you're like, that rapey.
Right. And so, up until then, you saw her originally, get the doctor, and she lists off all the things, the procedures she's going to practice on him. And I think you kind of assumed that she did them, and because he's gone, that she had killed him and dumped his body. And then when you find out that he's still alive and that this whole time she's been like working, slowly doing different procedures and adding to her portfolio, it's kind of shocking,
Yeah.
In a good way, though.
Yes. I was definitely like, when they rolled him out, I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's so fucked up. I love it.
That was the payoff that we needed, because you see that scene where she's just first got him just strapped to the medical table, and she's just telling him what she's going to do. She's like, yeah, I'm going to file your teeth down, practice all these procedures. And then you don't see anything for a while, and you think, oh, have they wussed out of showing us anything? But then you see him hanging there, and you're like, ah, there it is, good. Because that's what we're waiting for, isn't it, really?
When he was like laying there with the like, Megan is missing headgear on.
Yeah. And not to bring up that movie.
Like, I was like, okay, I'm going to hang as long as I can. But then she started grabbing the implements. I was like, let me know when the part's over. Ah!
I thought they were going to show a lot more, but she gives the injections into the jaw and she starts talking about the procedures, and then it just, cuts.
Yeah. Then I felt like the ultimate puss, because nothing fucking happened. Everyone's like, okay, you can come back. Like, damn it, I should have fucking sacked up. But I could have been like, yeah, I stayed for the whole movie. What? No, I can't. So what are you gonna do? All right, so security guard busts in, she kills the security guard and drags dude back into the warehouse.
See, that scene kind of annoyed me, only because it's like you have this dude in your warehouse. And you walk in and you leave all the doors wide open?
Mm. Yeah.
Oopsie. Hubris is all I can say. Anyways, the movie sort of wraps up where we flash back to Ruby. And she has a husband who apparently is out of town and come back to find out that his wife no longer has nipples or a hospitable vagina. So... Whoa! Is that not the right word? It's no longer accepting. No vacancy. I don't know.
There's no room at the inn.
Well, it's not that it's that's what it's made for, but I'm sure the husband appreciated it. So
and all the men boyfriends.
I'm kind of interested, though, that she has boyfriends and a husband and is sexually active and has, like, such a disconnection from being sexualized.
I know. I
thought that, like, half the fun of having sex?
I thought that was a little odd, too.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they make a point of showing the pictures and, like, oh, is that your husband? It's like, yeah. All of her boyfriends. And...
Right. So... What then we get a scene where Mary and Billy, the torturer dude, are having a conversation. He's like, let's go to L.A., you know, and Beatrice, by the way, Beatrice quit. And, you know.
And Grandma dies.
Yes.
Oh, and Grandma dies.
It's so sad because, like, she gets the phone call that Grandma dies and immediately she just, like, deletes her from her phone. Delete contact.
Well, I think that's, and that's the thing where at that point on she slips from being.
Yeah.
Like, ambivalent to sadist. Because she...
That was the one thing, like, anchoring her.
Exactly. That was, like, what was... Had her connected to maybe her, like, soul or something, you know?
Well, just, yeah, like, her...
Empathy.
Or... Yeah, exactly. So Nana's kaput, and she comes in and catches Billy getting a blowjob from... It's the junkie from the first film.
Right.
And... She follows her into the bathroom and basically scares the fucking
because like all of the other strippers that are in there like leave and she's there in front of the sinks and you know you hear a girl the stripper in the bathroom stall and they have the camera angle a lot of the time you know showing through the crack in the door and you hear her you know sort of scared breathing and then you see Mary out there like opening up her doctor's bag.
Well, I like she pulls out the bone saw.
Yeah. She's got like a little Dexter kit of like knives and things.
Strapping on the gloves, pulling on the fetish apron.
Yeah.
Ultimately, she just scares her and lets her go.
But do you think she was really... Because she was going to... Do you think she was going to do something until she saw that camera?
No, I think she deliberately looked into the camera.
Oh, to say like... Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, shortly after that, he has his little masturbatory fantasy of her stripping and then stabbing him with a scalpel.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, nothing.
Okay. So, anyways, the reason we brought up the whole husband was because he comes home, finds the no vacancy sign on his wife's vagina, and decides that that's not cool. Beats up Beatrice to find out who did this to his wife, and then basically breaks into her house and stabs Mary. She's able to fight back and off the husband and drag herself into her, her operating room. And we get sort of this, sort of like the pair scene to the opening scene, which has her in like cutting open turkeys and stitching them back together. Mm-hmm. She stitches herself back together, like full Rambo style.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when the cops arrive, they discover the dead dude. They find her portfolio, which is photos of the dude that she's kept, you know, the doctor that she did all the body modification on. And Mary.
Yeah.
That scene's great. Like that shot when the camera pulls up.
Mm-hmm.
That's really beautiful.
Blood, and yes. You see the cut open and her sewing it up.
The whole scene of her dragging herself into the operating room with the blood just sort of like pooling around her with each sort of step I thought was, I mean, it was definitely visually kind of tasty,
mm-hmm.
even though, you know, obviously we don't like to see women bleeding or whatever, but in terms of like the aesthetic of it, it was pretty awesome. I have to say that there is a visual flair to this movie that you're kind of like, okay, the Saska sisters have like a bag of tricks that they're just starting to learn to play with that I think is really pretty cool. So
like the rape scene, I like the way that was shot because it wasn't graphic. I mean, it's basically just her face and those dead eyes.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. I will say that from a feminist perspective, the fact that we saw some of it like POV and through the camera, not so great.
Yeah.
But I'm really trying to not focus on the rape scene. raped out and over rape. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, they definitely have an eye for composition that you got a little bit of in the first film, but definitely
they stepped up their game
in the second one. Mm-hmm. So when the credits rolled, I looked around in the room and there was a lot of like confused faces sort of. And when I asked Ariel and Matilda, both of them kind of didn't know how they felt about the movie. And I feel like it's definitely one you have to sit with a little bit. Next day, Ariel, how do you feel about American Mary?
I think I like it more today than I did last night. Maybe.
Yeah.
Like you said, the visual flair was really great. I mean, I think the Mary character was really interesting. I loved the parts with Betty and
Ruby.
I thought that was really interesting. Like I said, when we were talking about the first movie, I feel like they really have something to say. And they were starting to kind of open that up when they had those scenes with Betty and the woman. Like they had something to say about women's sexuality or the, you know, female form and all that kind of stuff and how society views you. And I thought that was really interesting, but then they kind of step away from the part that I thought was the most interesting. And I almost wish there had been more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wonder, as they do more movies, if they'll have even more to say about that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. or have different things that they're going to do and touch on it more, not just have this sort of like one or two scenes of it where it's not, you know, fully explored.
Definitely.
Okay. So who would like to go next?
I'll go next. I'll just give a little bit of background. I saw this movie a month ago at the cinema. I heard about it when I was at the Halloween Fright Fest All Nighter thing, because this movie showed at Fright Fest in the UK here in London back in August, and it was really popular, and it was like a, you know, what do you call it, like a, you know, unseen gem kind of thing, and everyone was really pleasantly surprised. So when Fright Fest came to Bristol in November, they mentioned it. They said, oh, by the way, American Mary, we're touring with it, because they toured around the UK with the movie, with the Soska sisters and Catherine Isabel going with it. So I saw it, yeah, about a month ago, in the UK in the cinema with the three of them doing a Q&A, which was pretty cool. I was really excited about it because I'd heard all this buzz, you know, but all horror fan buzz, you know, so I thought, wow, like if everyone likes this movie so much, like it must be really, really cool. And it had a rating of, I think it was like 7 or something on IMDb. And I thought, wow, like for a horror movie, that's really, really high. So I had really, really high expectations going in, which meant when I first saw it at the cinema, I was kind of disappointed. It felt like a bit of a letdown. My expectations were so high, though, so I was kind of a bit like, oh, that's a shame. But having rewatched it last night, I think similar to Ariel, I like it more today than I had before. There are some things that I still don't like about it, which I'm afraid I still don't like about it. Everything seems a bit abrupt with this film. Like I said just now about having a transition, there seems to be no transition between any parts of this movie in many ways. And the ending, I think, is really, really abrupt. Even though you get that little tiny scene with Ruby and her husband, and you're kind of like, you blink and you miss it, and you're kind of like, what? Hang on, what just happened? Who was that? And then right at the end, when you get the phone call from Beatrice to Mary, that's when you're going, oh, okay, right, now I get it. But it that just all seemed really, really quick. I mean, I like how the movie ended. I just didn't really like how they got to the end, that last little part.
Yeah.
Something I was going to say until Rachel.
All right.
Yeah, that the ending with the husband coming showing up, it feels kind of it's abrupt. It feels like they didn't you expect it to be like the cop coming in and finding her doing something, or you know, Billy finally like manning up and like,
yeah,
you know, doing something to her or something along those lines. You don't expect the husband. He feels kind of out of left field.
Yeah, and one thing that came up in the Q&A with the Soskas was that someone asked if they had ever planned to make a sequel, and they said that they had thought about it, and obviously it's been popular enough that it could warrant a sequel, but they thought that this should be a self-contained story, and they didn't want to sort of string it out, and they thought that it ended the way that it had to, really, which I thought was quite good of them, really, to not capitalise on their own movie and just to sort of wrap it up. So that was pretty cool.
And they did, instead of, you know, trying to make more money off of it.
Exactly. I mean, maybe they didn't know how popular it would be going in, but yeah, so that was quite cool. I thought I really liked the character of Mary, and I thought her actions are pretty believable, even though I find it a bit like, I mean, I'm just reading my review back, and it's quite harsh, actually. I think like maybe I should have waited until I'd watched it a second time before reviewing it properly, but I like it better than I did before, so that's something. Just in terms of, we learn very quickly at the beginning of the movie that she's got no money, so she's desperate for money. So it would have been nice to have seen her reaction to getting some money, though, to agree to do more surgery, because it just seemed that you never got any of that. You never got any of the sort of scenes of her being fulfilled in what she's doing to be able to make a decision to carry on doing it.
Mm-hmm. Right, you see her kind of get the new place, but that's all you really
yeah do. Yeah, she gets some
very happy. They're no. not like, you know,
no.
Yeah, but also I like how this movie, because it surprised me that she just quits medical school so abruptly, but then again, something that came up in the Q&A was that she wants to be a surgeon and she idolizes surgeons. And when she gets invited to the party, she's like, wow, going on for drinks with the surgeons. Brilliant. Yeah, I'd love to. And then they just completely, you know, ruin her life and rape her and everything. And just
what did you guys think about her wearing that dress to that party?
I don't really know. I mean, I figured it was like she really wants to be part of this crowd. So she really wants to impress them, I guess. And she didn't know what the party was going in. But it's like this weird sort of sex party. And the doctor says something like, oh, I knew you were strapped for cash, but I never thought I'd see you at one of these. Implying mm-hmm. that she was supposed to know what it was about and that she agreed right. to go to it willingly, maybe. But when she quits medical school.
Then why drug her?
Well, yeah.
Because he obviously got off. I mean, she was kind of, I think she was sort of flirting with him, and wasn't it you that said that she probably would have slept with
yeah,
him
like,
had he not
dude,
done that?
Calm down.
But maybe what he liked was having, I mean, she wasn't just drugged, she was like paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And
which explained why she woke up with him still there.
Yeah.
Like all snug in a bug, like a bug in a rug.
Yeah.
Ugh, yuck. Okay, sorry, continue, yep. Joan.
Oh, it's just something that, I don't know which of the Soskars said this, because they look the same, but like, right. said that how, you know, she idolizes this profession and these people, and then when they've done that to her, they've taken it away from her, so that's why she's like, fuck it, I don't want to be a doctor anymore, if that's the kind of people that doctors are. Right. But I thought it was cool how the movie was all about, it's not about saving lives, or it's about the craft, and I liked how you mentioned the like the turkey scene at the beginning was bookended with her sewing herself up at the end, kind of like it's not about the out, it's just about how it's about how things are done, and like she knew that she was the best one to do it, even though, because I was confused at the ending as well, in terms of, so is she sewing herself up to try and save herself, to stop herself bleeding, or is it just a case of someone's going to do this, it might as well be me, I'm the one that's going to do it best,
right? Yeah, and she really did want to hone her craft, because she even says something where she's like looking through her book or something, and talks about how her work's gotten so much better. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's when she's going back to
him,
the torture
she's like,
guy.
Yeah.
That was kind of amateur hour back then, and I've gotten so much better now.
Mm-hmm. Because we didn't talk about it, but there is a cameo by the Soska sisters.
I know,
they
I was just
going
to say that. We totally
oh, sorry.
Skipped over
oh, then
that
I will
bit.
Let you say
no,
it.
Go.
You know, I like to let people say their own thing.
Oh, man, they were so creepy in that, like, character that they played, the way they're, like, looking, like, longingly at each other, yeah. and like touching each other.
I couldn't decide if it was meant to be funny or not, where she, like, they're talking about feeling connected, and Mary says, well, everyone's connected to themselves, and she goes, yeah, und nein. It was, I don't know if we were meant to laugh at that or not, but
I
found
so.
it
really
funny.
Kind of
over the top,
which I like.
Yeah.
And so they run the body modification website.
Yeah.
And they come to her for her special gift for it. So we were sure they were going to ask her to sew them together.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
We talked about connection, and Randy said that, oh, he's going to sew them together.
And we were like, oh,
yeah,
you
totally
wrote this.
Yeah.
But then it turned out, like, of course, because it's them, they twisty twist, they wanted to swap
yeah. their left arms, and then they gave her like a picture of some other things they wanted to have.
I wish
done.
We could have seen the post-surgery. I
know.
Wanted to see the whole
yeah.
and the because
like
clearly they had a good
things.
Makeup artist on set.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
because
yeah
we didn't talk about how great the Betty Boop characters like how I mean it's not great surgery, but how like they did a good job with
a really good job
with all the like latexy stuff. I've been
yeah,
watching too much Face Off.
The doll woman too looked really cool.
Yeah. One thing I will say is that considering this is the second movie, it's pretty fucking good. I mean, going from Dead Hooker to this, I mean, you'd think this would be like their third, fourth, fifth movie. I mean, the difference was pretty astonishing. So definitely give them thumbs up for that.
Yes, agree.
Yeah, they're obviously very talented.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So, did we get your thoughts? Or we didn't get Sarah's thoughts. Sorry, Sarah, what did you think?
It's definitely a shift in gears from Dead Hooker, because to me, Dead Hooker is a grindhouse comedy, where this is definitely it's darker. It's the subject matter is very grim. As far as like the, you know, Mary's story, but it's kind of hard to say I enjoyed the film. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought that
there was a lot there. I definitely agree that I would have loved to have seen more. I would have liked to have seen more of a discussion, as far as like, you know, because basically these body mod people are taking control of their own body and forming it in ways that they want it to be, and there was some of that in there, mm-hmm. but I think there should have been more.
Yeah.
Right. And that's exactly what I was saying earlier. It's like she touches on these really interesting things, and I wish it had been expanded on more, because the commentary there was intriguing.
They could have excised the whole love story with the torture and focused more time on that. Sorry, go ahead, Jody.
Oh, I was just going to say, I would have also liked more of evidence, I guess, of how good Mary really is, because she just does that one operation in the basement, and then the next day, these, you know, like cosmetic surgery obsessed women who have got all this money to go to the best doctors, and they pick her to do this surgery. I mean, mm-hmm. like, it sounds like nobody else would have done it for Ruby, but just a bit more of like, wow, she did a really good job on this guy. Wow, I've never seen stitching like this before. So something that made them go to her instead of just, well, this is the only person that would do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Definitely. So any other thoughts, Sarah? I don't want to cut you short if you have more to say.
That was pretty much it.
Okay. Well, I have a text from Matilda, who wanted to be here today, but she's a busy gal. So she sent me her thoughts via text, so I'm going to share them right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. After letting it sit overnight, these are my thoughts on American Mary, which she spelled American. It's exploitation. So talking about how sexist it is probably a fool's errand. But the characters of the doll and Betty Boop are so compelling in terms of grotesque femininity and choice. They are the most lovable people in the movie. It's almost like the Michael Jackson thing, where he appeared to be making aesthetic decisions that only he understood, because they moved him further away from what is aesthetically mainstream, most often the point of surgery. Hope that helps. Have a great podcast.
Oh, that's interesting. To Michael Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I mean, everybody kept talking with Michael Jackson. You're like, why is he doing this to himself? What is going on here? Who is doing these surgeries and why?
Mm-hmm.
But he was obviously making a choice about it.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that Matilda mentions about how nice these characters are, because really, Beatrice is the nicest person in this movie.
Oh, I mean,
she's kind of annoying at first, but then you get a genuine sense that she's very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she has a real heart. And in the scene where she is calling Mary to warn her about the husband, you know, coming to her. I mean, she was like, so she obviously had held out while he was like torturing her, not wanting to say where Mary was. And she felt bad about the fact that she'd had to give up that information.
Yeah.
You know,
She
considered Mary her friend and she didn't want to do that.
So there was
general contrition about it, you know, like genuine contrition.
She was kind of like the heart of the movie.
Yeah, I felt it was nice that Mary had a character like that who was a friend, because she's just got the people that want her to do the surgery on them, and then the people that want to have sex with her, and her nana who's far away, and then this really nice character who just is bugging her all the time to go out for coffee with her and just wants to, you know, be friends with her. So that was nice for Mary.
Yeah, that was a really nice touch. So actually, I thought it was an interesting question, or that she mentioned sexism. What do you guys think about, again, this is a movie that gets a little bit of an immunity idol strictly because it's made by a woman. Mm-hmm. If we are watching a movie that was made by a dude where the first procedure she does is genital mutilation, do you feel like it would have sat with you as easily as it kind of, like, I mean, we sort of brushed over it.
Yeah.
When we talked about it, it was sort of a non-issue.
Like the rape scene, and then, I mean, what she did to the doll woman, I mean,
we would be like, misogyny!
Right. Because when you read about, like, extreme female circumcision, I mean, that's what they do, is sew it up, and all that's open is, you know, so that they can menstruate and urinate, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's, so I wonder if it had been a guy, would I have felt the same way? I wonder, like, we're we're expanding when we're talking about it on the sort of the seeds that they planted in the movie. And if it was a man making the movie, I wonder if I would have wanted like the movie to have expanded on that for me to be accepting of what was put in front of me. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Do they get a little bit of an immunity idol for it? And what is, you know, like just kind of as women filmmakers, are they able to kind of go some places and it's perceived as being thoughtful versus exploitative? Or I don't know. I don't know exactly what I'm trying to ask. There's something,
I understand what you're saying.
I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts around that?
I don't know. I think I need a little more time to really sort of figure out how I feel about that. And part of me thinks that because there are so few, you know, so relatively few women working in movie making in general, let alone horror, it's almost like I don't even think about that. I just think, cool, there's women making movies.
Right.
And, you know, absolutely. So it's almost like I don't even worry about it.
Yep.
I agree with Joe on that. I didn't even give it much thought.
Right. Me neither. I just, since we're talking about it, I thought I'd bring it up. But yeah, I'm with you in that I'm so on board and excited to see like the success of a female horror filmmakers that I kind of, I'm like, yeah, I'll brush that under the rug. We don't need to go into that.
Yeah.
But she brought it up. So I was like, we should probably like at least give it thought.
Yeah. What did you think of the male characters in this movie? Because you've got the doctors that are like despicable rapists, but then you've got the guy, I think his name is Lance, he's like a security guard or something. He's the long haired sort of tattooed guy who gives her the milkshake and everything. And
I actually really liked that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where there's a scene in which she sits down with the bodyguard, and you can tell she's sort of having an internal struggle about the things that she's done. After she gets busted by the security guard, right? And she kills the security guard and beats him to death.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So I think I'm sorry, Sarah, I keep talking over you. Go ahead.
Well, I just think it's, you know, she feels guilty about the security guard. And I think it seems almost like she's disappointed she had to kill the doctor.
Yeah.
Mm.
And so, you know, but yeah, when he tells the story about his mom and then, you know,
well, I think up until this point, everything she's done is sort of just, to a certain degree. Maybe not the sewing up of the torture victim, the very first one, but everybody who she's worked on has chosen to have something done, or it's the doctor, and she's getting, you know, she's getting justice, right? Now, this guy, the security guard, the only thing he did wrong was be at the wrong place at the wrong time, and she's killed him. Mm-hmm. So now kind of her sort of twisted set of morality is being challenged because she's no longer like kind of, you know, the good guy,
right,
quote unquote. Right. So she sits down with this security guard, this big long haired dude who's brought her a milkshake. And he tells her the story about how his mother was attacked by someone who like a home invader. Mm-hmm. And beaten nearly to death, and how he wishes that he had known her when he found the guy that killed his or almost killed his mother, so that she could have done her thing, and that she should not she should not devalue the work that she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of re-energizes her, but also it's kind of the last sort of time you see her ambivalent about the things that she's doing.
Yeah, after that, you really don't see her question it at all.
Yeah. So let me talk about a couple of things I thought were noteworthy in the movie. There was this sort of comparison, like between surgeons and slashers or killers.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of it. Cause you know, if you think about what surgeons do, it's pretty fucking grisly work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it was interesting to sort of see that through the horror lens, that all of the surgeons really sort of relish the idea of cutting into flesh and being a slasher. And they talk about the high you get from cutting into flesh, which I thought was interesting because this movie does have a very like body horror adjacent kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
And so in addition to body horror, there's also a strong influence I felt of like Japanese horror. This is sort of like there at one point when you find the body and he's like strung up with no arms and legs, I was like, well, we have now seen the American version of Audition.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting and cool because, like, clearly there's a lot of homages to the different genres in both the movies. And it goes back to just being, like, clearly they're fucking horror geeks, which mm-hmm. I can identify with. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I would say out of the three of us last night, I had the most positive response to the movie. Like, I'm like, I don't know if I'm crazy, but I really liked it. And I immediately liked it with reservations. I felt like there was a rush to the conclusion a little bit, and they kind of shoehorned the whole thing with the husband in just so they'd have a way to wrap up the story. I would say the first first three acts I was totally on board with, but that final act, there was like a pacing problem with like the stuff with the stripper guy kind of struggling with his feelings and having masturbatory fantasies and kind of in love with her, kind of scared of her. She's flipped over into sadism and we're all sadists here. And then there's like this sort of like rushed kind of conclusion where she dies. But like, I would have really enjoyed the film if it had ended with the reveal of the guy in the warehouse. You know, like if she had seen him, we didn't even need the security guard. We just get her talking about what she's going to do next. Roll credits. That to me would have been a perfect, what I would have been like, this movie is amazing, but it gets a little bogged down at the end. However, that being said, I did really like it. I felt especially the stuff early on stuff with Ruby and Beatrice was really interesting.
Yeah.
And I love the stuff with the twins. I wish they had actually dug deeper into that. Like
yeah,
she had,
too.
Instead of getting into the weird torture-y world, she had gotten deeper into kind of like the dark side of body modification mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. really kind mm. of worked around that
ambiguity.
There we go. Around like, you know, being the doctor that's willing to do the procedures that no licensed doctor mm-hmm. will do. And like, when does it stop being self-expression and just become like an unhealthy mutilation? Like going there with like the people who are like doing the intentional amputation. And mm-hmm. like, I would have liked a little bit more of that,
yeah.
but you know, it is what it is. And I have to say overall, I really did actually like this movie and felt positive last night and feel positive about it still today. There is definitely the one thing that just kind of bothers me though, is like in the credits, how it's like for Eli Roth.
Yeah.
Right.
And Matilda had said, she's like, yes, this is very much the movie that Eli Roth would like the pretty female filmmakers to make for him.
Sure.
Okay. Well, no, that's the thing is like Eli Roth, you know, took a liking to them, took a liking to Dead Hooker, helped them out. Mm-hmm. You know, real big. And so I guess he was like, hey, you know, I want to help you guys on your next film. And the sisters were telling him, oh, yeah, we've got all these scripts we're looking at. You know, we're working on this and that. And he's like, all right, I want to see something in 2 days. Mm. And so they sat down and wrote American Mary in 2 days and gave it to him. And he was just like, this is cool. Hmm. So, yeah, so he's.
Fuck them. 2 days?
Yeah.
It takes me 2 days to write a 500-word article. But, you know, kudos to them, really. Yeah. Fuckers.
That's how it came about. And, yeah, he's been, like, their biggest champion as far as, you know, getting it, helping them promote, getting them out there, helping them with the distribution and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's. Which kind of, I'm really hoping that they kind of split off, because I would hate to see a female version of Eli Roth, because
right.
he's not
I
very
good. I
think they
good. Have more interesting things to say. I think by movie 3 and 4 and 5, it's going to be like, the student has become the master.
I really hope so, because I think it could be really amazing if that's true.
Yeah, and here's the thing, is like, I'm like, talking shit about Eli Roth, which is so the thing to do. It's like trendy hate Eli Roth thing. And I don't actually hate him. I feel like it's great anytime people promote other film, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
other
absolutely.
Filmmakers and help women bust through the glass ceiling. So, and I know he's been really supportive of Hannah's zine Axe Wound. And I think that's fucking awesome. So I actually don't really have a problem with the Eli Roth thing. I just thought the phrasing of for Eli Roth mm-hmm. was a little kind of weird. Yeah. But now that not I kind of know the story, that makes a little bit more sense. Whereas in the first movie, they thanked him.
Yeah.
Him and Robert Rodriguez and a bunch of other people. I mean, these are like petty little things.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really matter. But so, yeah. Saskia sisters, what do you think? I mean, do you think do you suspect that you're going to be seeing more from them? Are you excited to see what's next? Are they the face of female?
I'm definitely excited to see what's coming next. I hope they continue to expand on the path that they're on. Yeah. I think they have got a real good eye for stuff, uh-huh. and I'm feeling positive about them.
Yeah, me too. And I hope it's more than just what we said, like, it's cool that women are making movies and we're definitely going to watch it. I hope, like, if you drew a graph of how good this was compared to Dead Hooker, like, the next one's got to be, like, off the charts. So, like, I'm excited at the prospect of that, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah, they're obviously on, like, an upward trajectory and hopefully it'll continue to go that way. I mean, the movie, you know, looked amazing and they obviously have interesting things to say. And so if they keep going that way, I would be really, really excited to see what they do next.
Mm-hmm. I love the blend of humor and yeah. horror. I feel like that is kind of their signature.
And that's tricky to do, you know?
Right. And I think women are not, like, quote-unquote capable of making horror, and women are not funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. Like, those are the stereotypes, yep. and they're able to, like, really effectively buck those. And not only are women not funny, but quote-unquote funny, but they're also... Their humor is so dark, and it's mm-hmm. such a, like, you know what I mean? It's such a effective way to combat those kinds of stereotypes. Yeah, so I'm totally for it, and it's good to see. I mean, it's still kind of tokeny because there are just so few
right.
women, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them, you know what I mean? They're so involved with, like, the Women in Horror Month, which, happy Women in Horror Month, ladies, hey! AKA Lady Horror Christmas, what? So...
Yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic that there's more to it than just, you know, the token thing, like you said. I mean, there are some really, really good little touches in this film. I don't know if you noticed when she does the surgery in the basement for the first time and she comes home and cries in the shower, you can still hear the guy screaming, like, it's like it's ringing in her ears still. Mm-hmm. So it stayed with her. And similar to Dead Hooker, the music I thought was excellent in this movie as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really
good. Like the mixes of sort of heavy metal and industrial music and then the classical as well. I just thought was really, really well put together. I'm just really, like, really pleasantly surprised at how well crafted this was on a technical level.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a few issues with some of the editing, and like we said about the abruptness and about how the third act is kind of like it falls apart a little bit and it's a bit messy. Also, some of the dialogue scenes seemed to be cut like straight away, like there was no beat to really get what was said. At the very beginning, when she meets Billy, when she does the surgery, he says, "Do you want to make $5,000?" And then when she gets him to kidnap the doctor, she says the same thing. Do you want to make $5,000? But that scene is like a second and a half long, and I'm kind of like, "What? Hey, what just happened?" I think. scenes like that, you needed an extra second to just get what's just been said.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I think those are really minor issues, considering this is their second film.
Yeah.
It's
nice when you get to nitpick a movie. You know what I mean?
Right, that's good enough that you can do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So good for them. What did you guys think about my thoughts about how, like, I wish it had ended right with the reveal of him hanging? Would you have felt satisfied with that ending, or did you need to see her?
I don't think I would have been satisfied with that. I would have liked more closure to her story, but I definitely agree with you in terms of they could have gone a lot further with the cosmetic surgery angle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
What did you think of Catherine Isabel? I thought she was brilliant.
I loved her.
Oh, she was wonderful.
Yeah.
I want to see more of her in everything. She's mm-hmm. awesome. Because usually she's in, like, tiny little bit parts. She'll show up on, like, an episode of Supernatural or something.
Yeah, she was in X-Files as well.
Yeah. She's got, like, a little genre thing, niche going.
But yeah. One thing I wanted to ask in the Q&A, and I didn't get around to, was I wanted to ask what it was about horror that really appeals to her, because she was in Freddy vs. Jason as well, and Apps, and but she mentioned that she's actually a massive wuss and she hates horror, well, doesn't hate them, but she doesn't watch a lot of horror movies because she's so scared.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I wanted to ask, you know, related to that, even more so, what is it that draws you to them? But yeah, ran out of time, unfortunately, didn't get to ask, but I'd love to know, for someone that's really squeamish and kind of wussy when it comes to horror movies, what is it that she likes about it from an actress's point of view?
Yeah, that would be interesting to know. Yeah.
For someone who's squeamish, she did a pretty great job.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, she's awesome. Okay, cool. So that is the Soska sisters. Boom! Take that, internet. And I feel like we're doing this in a relatively short period of time for us. So let's wrap up. We just have a couple little things to do. Starting with actually, Jody, you can take over now. This is your jam.
Oh, well, the ZGBG, Zombie Girls.
The ZGBG.
This is really quickly sort of decided because I'd honestly forgotten about it until you mentioned it 2 hours ago. this is our thing where we each pick three movies in a genre or something like that as a beginner's guide. So if you come across a movies fan who's never seen a horror movie or whatever and wants to know, where should I start with this, you know, with XYZ, what would you suggest? So today we are doing zombie movies as we are the Zombie Girls. We figured it was
appropriate.
Yeah. And there are so many. And where would you start indeed? I'm inclined to say Night, Dawn and Day. That's my gut reaction. But I've picked instead just my three personal favourites. So those are Day of the Dead, Brain Dead, or Dead Alive, if you prefer.
Oh, good one.
And City of the Living Dead.
Excellent.
I picked Night of the Living Dead because it's like my personal favorite. And then 28 Days Later. Mm. And then I picked either Shaun of the Dead or Zombieland because I love the comedy, like zombie subgenre.
Okay.
And I think that's really fun.
Cool.
How about you, Miss Sarah?
I picked Dead Snow.
Oh, ooh,
so good.
Yeah.
That has the poo finger. No.
We all know Return of the Living Dead's my favorite, but I'm going to leave that off the list because that's just too easy.
Interesting.
Pontypool.
Ah.
Especially because it's fairly bloodless, and you know that's what a lot of people don't like about zombie movies is the gore.
Right.
And then my other one, because my friend's 5-year-old son is absolutely in love with this movie and watches it whenever he can. Fido.
Oh, nice one. Okay, so I treated the beginner's guide like I was thinking about this from an educational perspective because that's so fun. But I was thinking I wanted to pick samplings of something in different phases of the zombie genre. So I started off with, for your first one, to kind of get the idea of the, not necessarily the full origin, like we're talking voodoo, like, you know, black and white. But I picked my favorite of the Romero ones, Day of the Dead, as your starting off point to get an idea of where it all began, slow moving zombies.
We're so on the same page because that's exactly what I did.
High five. Boom. So that's the one where I would say where you're getting your like your fundamentals with the zombie thing. Mm-hmm. The next thing I would say is then you want something kind of fun, like where the zombie genre went next, where people started like expanding the definition of zombie, playing with it. And so I picked Return of the Living Dead because you can't have a better time with a zombie movie than that movie.
Sure.
But then, so then I wanted to go like, you know, post zombie movie explosion sort of parody and like a greater examination / homage to the original thing, modern day zombie, which would be Shaun of the Dead, because then it's sort of like they've got their education, so now they're able to like
enjoy
sit down and watch it as, you know, as a zombie aficionado, they're able to be also in on the jokes but also kind of exploring the ideas of what the genre is.
Thank you, Professor Rachel.
And that's Zombie 101. Curtsy, bow. Yes. Okay. So that now I'm going to hand things over to Sarah, who's going to give us the don't you fucking stream it Netflix warning anti-recommendation.
Well, let's see. Pretty much anything by, let's see, what the hell is his name?
Uwe Boll, Uli.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not
because
a
they're like all of his movies, like all of his damn movies are on there, and it's just horrible. No, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Not Uwe Boll.
Uwe Lamell.
Yes.
God, why do I fucking know this?
Yes. Anything by Uwe Lamell, just stay away from. If you see him as director, just skip past it.
Yeah. Okay. Good times. So I have my Netflix pick of the day actually is was mentioned briefly by Miss Sarah.
That's on there now?
Yes, girl.
Oh my god, how did
get
I miss
ready.
That? Because I've been like dying to see more of that since I saw it.
It's
like...
so good. Okay. So my Netflix streaming pick for this episode is actually a series called Todd and the Book of Pure Evil.
Yes.
So fucking good. Mm. So I'm going to read you the description from Netflix and then I'm going to tell you why it's amazing. Okay. A book of awesome power, one that will make your deepest, darkest desires come true, but at a horrifying cost, is loose in Crowley High. Thankfully, four teenagers stand between the book of pure evil and the end of the world as we know it. So this is why you got to fucking watch this show. It's awesome. Take a blender, put in Buffy the Vampire, like the Buffy series, 10 Mayhem Records, Beavis and Butthead, Jay and Silent Bob, and Kids in the Hall, blend it up, and you get this show, okay? It's like all metal, like ridiculous over-the-top humor. It's like all full of like awesome horror monsters, totally on PC, and it is fucking hilarious with like a Canadian twist.
Yeah.
Like the first episode, the thing is Todd wants to be a rock god. So this book which flies comes to him and it has like a pentagram and it's made from the skin of Satan's scrotum. And it like grants his wish and he becomes like he has like the corpse paint on and he's like full black metal and he's awesome. The only problem is, or it makes you like it rocks so hard it makes blood explode out of your ass and kill you. So that kind of gives you the level of the humor. If you're still laughing along with me, you're going to be totally into this show. But
I loved it, the episodes you showed me.
Yeah, and it has hilarious. Like the whole like high school, like, you know, Scooby Gang kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. But with like a total Hesher lens. There's like these like three metal dudes that like hang outside the front of the school and you're like, okay, are they good? Are they bad? But they like kind of advise Todd, who's the one person who's able to stop the end of the world. And like the high school's called Crowley High and there's like a group of Satanists trying to end the world. It's fucking great. I don't want to tell you everything.
And the guidance counselor, I think
the guidance counselor is my favorite.
Well, I think my favorite episode of Atticus the Guidance Counselor is the one where they do the musical of his life, where you find out he loses his virginity to a werewolf.
Oh my, he's my favorite. Like, his delivery is magic.
It is. It's great. Jason Mewes is the janitor.
Jason Mewes is the janitor and offers pearls of wisdom from time to time.
Like when he's talking with Todd in season 2 about... you know, yeah, I was in a relationship with a girl once and she got mad because it was like he used to sneak into her bedroom and comb her hair while she slept or something. It was just like...
I love the homunculus that looks like Todd. Yeah. Oh my god. There's so many good episodes. Basically, if you're a 12-year-old boy, you're going to love this show. Like, I have the huge sense of humor of a 12-year-old boy. Like, nothing is funnier to me than a fart. So this is like perfect for me. Jody will probably be like, tut tut.
That sounds great.
Well, definitely check it out and let me know what you think. I'd like to hear your feedback, Jody.
Cool.
I love it. Ariel loves it. And Smarty Pants Hilda loves it. So yeah. I think for everyone. She is a bit of a metal geek too. So
very
good. Yeah. She's super into it.
Awesome.
All right, ladies. So unless there's anything, I'm going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much for being on the show. It was so much fun talking with you and catching up with you. And thank you everyone in the audience for listening and for sticking with us during our break. We are back. We are ready to rock. Back with a vengeance.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Lots of high fives. Poor Ariel. Is your arm tired of high-fiving? So thanks everyone. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. Send us feedback. Let us know what you thought of the show, what you thought of American Mary, what you thought of two hackers. One hooker. And congratulations to the Saska sisters for being awesome.
Yes.
Mwah. Bye-bye.
And happy Women in Horror Month.
Oh, happy Women in Horror Month.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Okay, so Explody and I were just discussing about how we're going to try to keep this bad boy under 2.5 hours. So what do you... I'm, like, all for it, because I was telling her I was, like, inspired by the Splattercast, like, posting our episode, like, an hour after we recorded it. Mm-hmm. Have you guys listened to that episode yet? I want to know if I sounded like a complete buffoon.
You're next to DJ, so you sound fine.
Oh, that's true.
I was just going to say that.
Did you guys love his, like, talk about cat suffrage?
Yeah, that was really good.
And then I thought of you when we were talking about beards and mustaches.
Yeah, that was nice.
Oh. Yeah. I got a message from Matilda who gave me... She came over for the screening last night, but isn't able to come today because she had schedule conflict. But she just texted me her thoughts on, as we've been calling it, a Merc and Mary.
Right.
I have to give it up to Randy. He's the one that came up with that one last night. When we saw, I was like, oh my God, it's just a trash Merkin. He's like, that's why they call it a Merkin Mary. We were like, ah! He's like, yeah, motherfucker. Let's see. He was very offended by the movies, by the way.
Yeah,
I have to say.
He was
definitely like king feminist last night. There were a couple times where he was just like, you're hitting me. Yeah, kind of. But you know who that's Deacon from Revenge, the worst character on that show! Which kind of has ruined Stakeland for me because I hate Deacon so much. All right. Not that I watch girly shows like Revenge, because that would be lame. Religiously.
It's okay, Rachel. We all know you're a chick.
That's right. Have that, we'll travel. So I can't help it. How are you doing, Sarah? I know you got to be tired. You worked last night, huh?
No, I have the day off.
Oh, good. Okay, sweet. So this isn't too bad. Well, then what the fuck? You wanted to get up at like 8 in the morning?
Yeah. I've been up since 4:30 this morning.
Why?
Is it just because your schedule's like that from work? Or?
You know, on my days off, like when I sleep at night, I only sleep like 3 hours.
Really?
Yep.
I fucking love sleep. I could eat sleep. I see. Oh my God, I love it.
Me too.
Oh my God. Okay, one more Facebook related thing. We didn't talk about the video I sent you of the worst thing that could ever fucking happen.
Spiders? Yeah, no, I didn't watch it. I didn't watch that.
Oh, the spiders raining in Brazil?
Oh my God. There is no God.
At the State College here, they have a couple of female basketball players that are from Australia, and they are hot. And I was just like, okay, if I'm ever single again, I'm moving to Australia. They started looking up stuff in Australia and started seeing like pictures of the spiders. I'm like, fuck that. I am not going to Australia.
So in the battle of hot bitches versus spiders, spiders have the advantage. Advantage spiders. Yeah, no, fuck that. I stayed in Costa... We were talking about this last night. When I stayed in Costa Rica, my sister lived in this, like, hut in the jungle. I'm not exaggerating. And spider quotient in that place was... It was too much. There was too much variety of size, shape, mutation is the only way I could... Only word I could use to describe it.
Yeah, it's like Australia. It's like, you know, they're hairy and the size of Volkswagens and highly venomous. I'm like, no, fuck that.
I hate it when people put like spider pictures on Facebook or whatever, because I'm like scrolling by, no warning whatsoever.
Yeah, I follow this page about science. It's called I Fucking Love Science, and it's like every other day it's a spider. I'm like, scroll, scroll, scroll.
They're the worst, and if you like spiders, you're wrong.
Yeah.
The Soska sisters have pet tarantulas. There's actually a YouTube video of them feeding one.
Disgusting.
That is disgusting. Matt, I don't know why I said that. Matilda's, Mr. Matilda, I don't know, or
what does she call him?
Mr. Steinem.
Steinem yeah. has a pet tarantula, and I did not like it. And I never go in the man cave, right? But at his birthday party, we had to go back to the man cave in order to order some pizza, because the computer is sort of, you have to go through the man cave to get to the computer. She didn't realize, I don't know how, I've been friends with Matilda for over a decade. She did not know of my fear of spiders.
Oh, no.
Down the hall, just doodly-doo, bebop, and down the hall, like, you know. And I look to my left, and there's a giant stuffed spider. I'm like, ah! So I look to my right, and there was a real I, like, spider zone. It was... So then I like, stood there, like, stiff, waiting, like, with my back to the aquarium, because I didn't want to see it. Like, while she spent, like, a really, real, it felt like a really, really long time looking at pizza menus. Don't worry, he's a gentleman. I'm like, oh, there's what? No. So that's how I discovered. She discovered my fear of spiders, and I discovered that she is a freak.
And then one of the things that we had talked about last night was that we weren't so sure about the ending. Like, up until, like, you had said, you had brought up the fact that had the movie ended.
I'm feeling all my stuff.
Okay, you say it then. You said it.
I'm going to wrap up. Let's move on.
Sorry. My goodness.
Talking about Draculas, okay?
Oh, all right.
Oh, wait, why am I typing Netflix into the Netflix search bar? Oh, my God.
Go get some coffee, Rachel.
Seriously, I've only had one cup, and I'm like, you know, I need I'm a two-cup minimum kind of gal. Oh,